This is Fresh Air. Every week on this show, rock historian Ed Ward profiles a band or an artist that has somehow influenced the course of rock and roll. Artists that many of us missed when they were first becoming known, or who were performing before some of us were born. It's an understatement to say that the history of rock and roll is important to Ed, and there are certain trends in the retelling of this history that have him worried.
As we leave another year behind, I thought it would be appropriate to think about the future of rock and roll's past. What got me thinking about this was a letter I got from a listener. "Dear Mr. Ward," it said, "I listen to you on NPR and would like to ask you for some assistance. I work with young children who think that Michael Jackson was the first great rock star. These children were shocked to find out that Paul McCartney was in a band before Wings. My nephew is 5 years old. I would like to introduce him to the great rock and roll bands that have come before Wham and Michael Jackson. I want to make an audio cassette tape of classic rock hits. Do you have any suggestions for songs that will help my nephew on his way to a good appreciation of rock and roll music?" It was signed by Kathy Look in Gurnee, Illinois. Here's what I wrote back. "Dear Miss Look, you're probably going to hate me for telling you this, but about the worst thing you can do is to try to introduce youngsters to rock and roll. Really, trust me. Rock and roll is part of growing up. It's something you discover that your parents hate. If you're very lucky, your nephew will be a teenager in a time when there's something so yucky it'll drive his parents nuts. But make sure that kids have access to the classics, because there comes the day when they decide they need them. Make sure that you don't have a censorious attitude toward what they consider classic. The more they hear, the more they'll understand. Make sure they have access to good books on the subject and movies and videos, from Alan Freed and Mr. Rock and Roll to the remarkable footage of Prince's last tour. They'll find what they need, and they'll think it's cool if it doesn't smell too much like an adult. Both Wham and Michael Jackson are in the great rock and pop tradition, and if the kids you work with are into them, great. It doesn't take much for the smart ones to see how Michael connects with James Brown, and before him, Louis Jordan and Bill Robinson and Louis Armstrong. And Wham comes from the same British showbiz tradition that gave us a lot of the British invasion groups, and before that, the music hall. In sum, Miss Look, as The Who said, the kids are all right. They'll take care of this themselves if you silently provide the backup." But after I sent the letter, something else occurred to me. Yeah, the kids are all right, but they're really only as good as the information they're able to get. It's bad enough that there's a huge movement to turn back the clock and pretend that the awesome amount of teenage autonomy that's been built up since the 50s can just be turned off. It's horrifying to consider that it's now an accepted thing to put warning labels on records and declare certain types of concerts, most notably rap and heavy metal, off limits to teenagers. If rock and roll is to have a future, these trends have to be fought by those of us who grew up in a world where they weren't even chilling possibilities. What worries me, though, is something that's just as insidious because it's hardly getting any attention: the rewriting of the rock and roll past. The classic example is Albert Goldman, a contemptible figure who, it seems, will stop at nothing to reshape the past to his own mean vision of it. As critic Grill Marcus noted in a speech reprinted in last month's Harper's Magazine, Goldman, in his book on Elvis, twisted the remark that Sam Phillips of Sun Records once made. "If I could find a white boy with the Negro sound and the Negro feel," he told his secretary, Marion Keisker, "I could make $1 billion. But Goldman found the quote unacceptable. He changed it to, "If I could find a white boy who could sing like a nigger, I'd make $1 billion. Now, those of us who have studied rock and roll's history know that Sam Phillips built his business on working with black people, and those of us who have met him know that he's a deeply religious man to whom brotherhood is central. He would never have uttered the words Goldman imputed to him. But Goldman is who is believed. Marcus said that when he wrote a publisher who was quoting Goldman, misquoting Phillips, the publisher wrote him back and told him he was certain Goldman was correct because it was more vulgar. And when you're dealing with this sort of music, he wrote, vulgarity is always closer to the truth. What defense does Kathy Look's little nephew have against such scurrilous, insidious, and demeaning misinformation? The only defense is access to writers who tell the truth, none of whom have a fraction of the academic credentials or promotion budgets of the Albert Goldmans of the world. Read the pieces on Sam Phillips and Peter Guralnick's books, Feel Like Going Home and Lost Highway, and you'll never believe Goldman. The trouble is, both those books are out of print at the moment, and it's only because Guralnick's last book, Sweet Soul Music, got such good reviews that Harper & Row is putting them back into print this spring. And even that won't do the kid any good if all the public library has is Goldman's book, or no books on rock and roll at all, which, thanks to some fanatics who are currently on a campaign to borrow and lose library books they don't agree with, is a distinct possibility. And how will he even know what he's looking for if the older music he's exposed to is also censored by so-called oldies stations that don't play any non-Motown black music? Or if he grows up on sold-on-TV anthologies that falsify the true history of the 60s by leaving out the artistically and politically controversial stuff? Or if, by the time he's curious, record stores have stopped carrying artifacts of the music's past in order to maximize present profits? Just as it's up to those who make, manufacture, and write about music these days to see to it that the censors don't shut down rock and roll's present, it's up to those of us who write and care about its past to see to it that that past is brought into the future intact.
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll. He also writes for the Austin Chronicle.
Tell the truth.
This is Fresh Air.